The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Clap your hands.
Welcome to an episode of, I don't know what this is called, the Sixers pod.
It's called Give the Man His Trophy. Let's start there. Give the man his trophy.
So let's start there. Tons of MVP hoopla. I'm on the line here, first of all, with Greg Dennis, and I'm Dave Early. We're doing a structureless emergency pod because the Sixers had probably their best win of the year. And you were telling me offline, maybe one of the most satisfying victories of what? Of the
I'm struggling to think of a better regular season win in the process. Well, I won't even say win. I'll just say, you know, total experience given the context. I'm struggling to think of a better regular season experience.
Fun ones that come to mind. I mean, in the actual process, like TJ McConnell's jumper was fun. Almost beating Golden State Warriors was fun. Harrison Barnes at the three. When they were good, a couple of Jimmy Butler's game winners against the Hornets. And who else did he hit one against?
Was it? Yeah, Orlando, but those, I mean, like, those weren't like, I don't know. I just feel like, given everything over the last 3 years and becoming runner-up, the Sixers playing as well as they have, coming on the heels of the Ben Simmons return the other night, and then, you know, being down 15, the Nuggets fully healthy, a one seed in the West, and for them to play like that, come back, get the win, and be to completely dominate, I don't know. I just think I think that takes the cake.
Yeah, so why don't you tell me a little bit about your thoughts during that game? They're down by 15. They look so bad. Their defense had no chance in that first half. They come out in the second half, and they look like a college team who forgot to have five men on the court at one point. Did you see that?
That was amazing when Harden jumped up off the bench.
Harden came off the bench and poked it away, and then immediately you see, like, Dave Yeager yelling, hey, we only have four men on the court, and the refs call a tech. Doc's just sitting there with his arms folded, and I'm like, the narrative's going to be they're completely not ready. Doc Rivers guys just, do they not practice enough, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I got to say, like, even when they were down 15, I never felt like, you know, it felt like you kind of saw how quickly they could make a run. Like, they did it two or three times where they cut the lead to around 7 or 8. And then Embiid hit those back-to-back threes on that 2-for-1 at the end of the quarter.
Oh, yeah. He was just sprinting into that second one.
Just sprinting down and pulling up threes like Steph Curry. And then Niang hit the, you know, did it again at the end of the third, I think, where he hit the back-to-back baseline three. So I always felt the game was in reach. Denver, like you said, they're very, very good offensively. But, you know, something we won't say often, I do think that adjustment, putting Tucker on Jokic, I'm sure people will be talking about it, allowing Embiid to kind of roam a bit and play help D, that was big. It seemed like that was when their offense finally had a hitch.
Yeah, because as much as Jokic outplayed Joel in the first half, which I think despite maybe a points disparity, he did, because he was just picking them apart, dropping dimes all over the court, and they had a 10-point lead. Joel outplayed him decisively in the second half, completely locking them down. I mean, they only had 46 points the entire second half. So some sort of a trend.
And also, I got to say, like, you know, Embiid, I don't remember him having such a dominant game on the boards. It just seemed like he was cleaning up the glass. Anything that was in his area, he was going to grab it. And I mean, Jokic is a better rebounder than him. So, but it felt like tonight, like he had just decided that he was really going to exert his energy and put an emphasis on that. So that was very noticeable.
Yeah, Joel's taken some heat. And I do want to bookmark how well PJ Tucker played. So don't let us forget that. We have to circle back to that, because he only had 2 points, but this was easily his best game as a Sixer so far.
I think he earned his whole contract playing.
He did. So don't. This is your responsibility. Don't let us forget that.
I'm ready to. Anytime, I'm ready to jump back into the PJ pool.
Yeah, we got to jump back to the PJ pool. But on Embiid's boards, he's taken heat for that this season. The Sixers have been one of the worst rebounding teams in the league, and people are saying they have to trade for Andre Drummond to clean up the glass. And at one point in the year, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Joel implied that is the element of the game that he's been most thinking about, the surgically repaired thumb, because it was a box out play that he injured it on originally last season. I saw one of the first plays in game 3 against Toronto where he looked like he got it hammered and he winced, but maybe he heard it earlier and I guess it was fighting for boards. If you had to guess, that's something that's been on his mind ever since, because he hasn't exactly cleaned up the glass, and that wasn't an issue for him today. Like, he had every rebound. He was totally vacuuming them up. So, yeah, I guess either he said, I'm not thinking about my thumb today, or there were a lot of uncontested boards for him, or some of both.
Yeah, that makes sense. I could see where if thumb is an issue, that would hinder him on the boards, but for whatever reason, tonight, it just felt like he just had extra juice, as you might expect. And like the Sixers, you know, not a good rebounding team, kind of struggle a bit just vertically, athletically. and when Embiid plays like that, it's not the case, because he makes up for all of that.
Yeah, I mean, he was easily the best player on the planet today. For those wondering, like, should he be a starting all-star? Just the whole thing looks absolutely ludicrous right now.
I mean, it's just an embarrassment. You know, and you know, just to touch on that, like, the guy he should have been starting over without any question is Giannis, because, you know, you can make the team argument for Tatum. Durant, I don't really have any issue with Durant being a starter, but, like, Sixers have been better than the Bucks, and Embiid has been better than Giannis by any metric. And, you know, like, that's, to me, I haven't really heard anyone point that out. Like, you know, rather than just saying Embiid got snubbed, like, who should he have gone in over? It's obviously Giannis.
Yeah, I think Spike Eskin, I saw on Twitter saying, like, don't just say the rules stink. And people have pushed back to say, but the rules do stink. And I do think there's some merit there. However, I also like what you're saying, to take a stand and say, who should he have started over within the rules? Because he should still start over somebody. And I agree with you. I think Giannis is the guy there. It's unfortunate, especially because a lot of the people who voted for guys like Giannis, Tatum, and KD over him will have used the availability argument. By the time the All-Star game rolls around, Joel will have played more than them.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's missed games. Like, No one hasn't missed games this year, unlike some years where, you know, there's one guy who's like only missed one or two games. So you have to really weigh that in. Everyone's missed games. So, you know, that shouldn't have been a penalty for Embiid. I don't understand it, but
the Nuggets basically load managed the game in Milwaukee. You know, we would have heard about it here on the local radio if Embiid missed that game to load manage. Oh, they threw one in against the Bucks. Embiid's scared of, he was ducking Giannis.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I gotta say, like, as a Sixers fan, and I'm sure I'm sure Doc Rivers has joked about this with his staff. Like, you probably don't mind that Embiid has this chip on his shoulder right now, because he clearly was coming for blood tonight.
Yeah, I think it was Cassidy Hubbard after the game who said, "Do you feel you should be an All-Star starter?" Which is such an innocent way to ask that question that you
why
know
poke
the answer.
The bear? Yeah, why poke the bear?
She absolutely asked it as innocently as possible, and he was like, "I mean, I do feel that I'm often disrespected, but you know, I'm just focused on my teammates." It's cool.
That's great. It's great.
So yeah, I'm sure Doc Rivers doesn't mind. But on the other hand, Andrew Unterberger recently tweeted, like, this take it personally thing doesn't work out for Joe. And I think you might have seen some of that against the Nets, trying to put Ben Simmons through the rim early in that game.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny because, I mean, like, tonight, obviously, the opposite was the case. I think that...
not in the first half.
And that's true. He did come out and he was...
Looked flustered, but tight.
Thing in the Nets game that was noticeable is he went away from what he usually does, which is the mid-range jumpers, you know, the finesse kind of pick and pops, and he just was trying to stuff Ben in the basket, and yeah. I think that led to a lot of the difficulties he had in that game. Like, rather than just face him up, shoot over the top, he really wanted to like have a highlight. So
47 points, 18 rebounds, 5 assists, and one of my favorite ones was the out-of-timeout. Embiid sets a screen for Harden, gets the ball in his elbow off his, throws a no-look pass to the corner where Tobias, who did all his work in the second half, drained a huge three. Tobias, a couple plays later, comes down and hits and steals the ball from Jokic. Embiid also kicked in 3 steals and 2 blocks, 7 of 10 from the line, made all his free throws after missing his first 3, and 4 of 7 from 3. He looked like in the first half he was pressing. I think he was, you know, it's rivalry week, and I think he wanted to make a statement, and I think that worked against him a little bit. I don't know what happened in that halftime locker room. Was the orange slicer guy on point? Because they came out and they looked really, really sharp, and everyone looked kind of smooth and comfortable, right? You no longer saw that tightness once they started making that run. Shades of Brett Brown putting the 4 on their 5. Remember, he used to put Tobias on Marc Gasol.
That's right.
You did see that. You saw some Toby on Jokic. You saw some Tucker on Jokic. And we want to circle back to Tucker, talk about the game that PJ had. Here's his line. Let me just read this first. 2 points, 1 steal, 1 assist, 1 rebound, a minus 1 for the game in 24 minutes, 0 for 1 from 3.
Yeah, he was great tonight. I mean, he missed that layup. Like, Embiid had that great pass to the hoop. He misses the layup, and then he gets a tech on the other end.
Oh.
And I'm like, dying. I'm like, get him out. I've seen enough. And then
commits the ticky-tack to make it an and-one.
That's right. And then it really seemed like from that moment on, he really played his best stretch of the season by far. He was the tip-in, obviously, where I feel like he was, you know, in a time machine on that one. He looked like he got up higher than we've seen all year.
He did.
And then he did, right? I was like, was that Tucker?
I watched a little bit of 2018-2019 highlights the other day, and I see James hit him on a pocket pass, and he just dunks it with one hand pretty easily, which is impressive to see because he's like 6'5", but he's like 250 or something, right?
Yeah.
So he does look like a linebacker going up to dunk, and he got up that high and more on this tip-in. I'd like to see it in slow motion.
Yeah, he was great. And I mean, you know, he's a really tough guy to post up. And, you know, it's like trying to post up a fire hydrant. You know, you just can't move it.
People used to say that about Muggsy Bogues, right? He's surprisingly hard to post up.
Surprisingly hard to post up. And it seemed like Jokic kind of played into his hands on that. Because, he probably should have just faced up, but I guess he felt he had such a height advantage that he should just back him down. And he was great, and it also allowed him to play the weak side. So
Yeah, the job they did against Jokic in that second half and fourth quarter was excellent. He hit that hook shot, and the broadcast said that was his first field goal of this, was it half or quarter? And I was like, oh my goodness. Must have been the fourth quarter. But I remember that key play trying to back up Tucker on the baseline, and he passed the ball out of bounds or stepped out of bounds. It was a big stop, and there was a couple more of those. Obviously, Tobias getting that timely steal. Really, really good.
Harden team. Was very good. I thought, you know, low key, like nothing spectacular, not a big scoring game, but, you know, just really controlled the ball, set up Embiid really well, was very patient. I don't know how many turnovers he had, but I don't think it was many.
He had no turnovers.
So there you go. So
hyper efficient game. 17 points on just 10 shots. And clearly,
like he was playing to set up his guy. I mean, he knows as much as anyone what it's like to chase an MVP and how these games play into the narrative. And so you could see on those pick and rolls, there were a couple times where he probably could have went to the hoop and he just kind of waited for Embiid to come around. So I thought he was really good tonight.
Yeah, if you wanted to spin a fun narrative, I think you could say that Embiid was pressing a little bit in the first half, trying to play some ISO ball. And in the second half, he let James Harden get him to his spots, and it was much more fluid. And so playing through Harden worked out in Embiid and the Sixers on the whole's favor. Again, 17 points, 13 assists, 0 turnovers, taking just 10 field goals. He was 3 of 6 from 3 and 4 of 6 on the line. Really just a masterful performance. Daryl Morey ball efficiency.
I agree. And, you know, Embiid had that stretch down in the fourth where he had the dunk. That'll probably be the highlight. But then he had like a little jump stop, one-handed shot in the lane. And then he had two jumpers over Jokic. I mean, it was like 4 or 5 field goals in a row where it was like, okay, this is going to be...
He went on a personal 7-0 run. So he hits a behind-the-back crossover step-back fadeaway over Jokic. Then he comes down and blocks Murray. Then he trails a play and hits that pull-up one-hander, half-floater, half-pull-up you're talking about. Then they get a stop. And then on the next possession, it's the pick-and-pop where he drains a three. And
that's the dagger.
That was like 90 seconds.
Oh, that was before the dagger because he had two threes, right? So the second one was where he was kind of facing up Jokic and he just like where the roof came off the building.
Yeah, yeah. So the one I was originally talking about was put him up by 5. And then after a timeout, that's when Harden threw one to Embiid who kicked it out to Toby and his three put them up 8. They actually gave that lead back pretty quickly. It was like suddenly a 3-point game again. But then they just delivered, man. What a win.
What a win. And what a great game for Embiid. I want to touch real quickly, get your take on the spat between Niang and Shake in the second quarter, I believe. I think Tobias gets a hand on a ball. There's a 2-on-1 break coming back the other way. Shake has it. Niang's clearly open for the bunny, and Shake just either doesn't see him or decides to take it himself.
He saw him. I think he just thought getting that pass, there wasn't a ton of room between them. You know, neither Shake nor Niang were wide the way they teach you to really space. Uh-huh. So the defender was kind of able to play both of them a little bit. Still, you'd like Shake to be able to make that wraparound pass.
Yeah, he should have made the pass. I mean, I don't think that's even a question. But
yeah.
I'm more curious, do you feel like, no big deal, Niang was frustrated, he let Shake know it, they should have moved on? Or are you more, there's no need to show up your guy like that just because he made a mistake?
No, I think Niang, who is a little feisty and does like to talk trash, probably let out the appropriate level of frustration. A couple of games ago, I saw Tyrese Maxey take a layup where he had a trailer that he definitely should have hit with a behind-the-back pass, and he took it up himself, and I think he missed it. So it happens, and you should let a guy know, and it's normally fine, but I think Shake, who keeps his cards close to the vest, and you did. You remember him like jawing at Joel in the bubble.
Yeah.
When yeah, we were still learning his name, and right. he was like fighting with Joel. And you'd think maybe that would like get in his head or he would ride the bench. But the very next game, he hits a game-winning dagger against the Spurs. So Shake has this side of him. I assume that Shake felt very defensive being told by George, pass it to me. And Shake overreacted. That's how I would look at it.
Yeah, that was kind of my take on it too. And then I thought like, okay, like, is this something like... Is there just frustration in general on George's part that he feels like Shake doesn't find him? That's possible, but I'm with you. I felt like Shake could have easily just given like a quick "my bad."
That's what he should have done.
Over,
just tap your chest, and say "my bad."
Right? Yeah, that was kind of my feel for it.
I think that's what 9 out of 10 athletes, basketball players, do in that spot, even in pickup. Like, oh, you're right. I did have you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially if I didn't make the shot.
Yeah. That was tough. That was tough. I mean, I understood Shake, like, it was just defensive, acted out of instinct. But
you know how when you miss a layup or you get ripped, how hard you hustle back to make a play? I think that's kind of what Shake was feeling like.
Yeah, totally. But you know, a win like this makes it so easy for either one of them to come up to the other one in the locker room and just be the bigger person and be like, hey, you know, my bad. You know, when you win a game like that and there's so much positive emotions flowing through the team, I feel like it kind of masks whatever incident on the bench occurred.
So let's take a quick break right here and jam in a few words from our sponsors. When we come back, I want to ask your thoughts on, do we owe Doc Rivers some credit, or did the Sixers have enough talent? They're winning in spite of Doc at times. I know there was a stretch where there was like four guys out on the floor. Obviously, Montrez played, and he was a -7 in just 10 minutes. And then I want to talk to you a little bit about football. So stay with us. We got some heaters coming after the break. And we're back. I'm here with Greg Dennis. Greg, real quick. Don't want to harp on this because we talk about this way too much anyway. This is such a sensitivity point in Philadelphia. The backup center minutes, Doc Rivers. Do we owe Doc some credit? I mean, the Sixers have won like 20 out of 24 games, but at the same time, you watch that game and at times they're down by 15, and I'm like, they don't need to be down by 15. They're playing like a team who doesn't practice much. Joel has no idea what to do when you triple team him. Guys don't know where to stand. At one point, you have four players on the court, and it's a technical foul, and Doc doesn't even seem aware of it. You got Dave Yeager, like, barking out, someone get out there. and Trez, I mean, we learned in the bubble in 2020, Doc lost his job in L.A. because he overplayed Trez against Jokic, and guess who we see tonight? It wasn't Paul Reed. So tell me what you think. What's the appropriate level of vitriol or praise for Doc these days?
What do I always tell you about Doc? Gotta let the good doctor cook. you gotta let the good doctor cook. No, I mean, look, if you're gonna criticize him, and he certainly has deserved criticism, then you know you gotta give him credit when the team is winning and they're doing good things. I mean, I do think the backup center thing is a very real thing, and you know, Montrez, again, you saw tonight, like, as soon as he came in the game, it was like Jokic was just drooling.
So was Ben Simmons two nights ago.
So was Ben Simmons.
The most notorious non-rim attacker in the sport was like, oh, Trez is on me? This is buckets.
Yeah, it was really tough to watch. And, you know, he's approaching DeAndre Jordan levels on defense, where it's like, very quickly, the team can score 8 points in a row, and you're just like, what are we doing?
You know? Your center's only 6'7". Is that obvious?
So, yeah, I mean, when that happened, like, I can't imagine what it's like for Embiid. Like, you know, you play so well, you get a lead, and then you leave and just watch this happen. So
this is something that sticks in my mind, and it's a broader conversation, but I'll let you finish your thought. Go ahead.
No, so I was happy that at the very least Doc matched up Jokic's and Embiid's minutes in the second half, and went to Tucker. And, you know, I feel like Tucker obviously has been underwhelming for most of the season. Like, maybe he's just the backup five, and that solves it. I don't know. I mean,
to That's me, what happened to Horford.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the playoff time, he was just the bag of five. And
he's just the bag of five. And, like, that's fine. I mean, the Sixers have other guys that can step in there. So I don't know. Like, to me, that wouldn't be a bad outcome.
I don't know. He was so good down the stretch that I would think if you could load manage him to the finish line, you might want him out there more. But what I was going to say is the backup center thing is big, because you tell me if you disagree. But a win like this and a performance like this is going to dramatically, to a degree it shouldn't, swing the MVP conversation. And it makes me think back to last year in those two head-to-head games that were so winnable. The Sixers lost home games to the Nuggets and Bucks by a total of like 6 points. They were so winnable. DeAndre Jordan and Paul Millsap were just crushing in those games. And like you said, if you're Joel Embiid and you see that you're outplaying Jokic and you're outplaying Giannis, your two most top rivals for these MVP awards, but your team's losing by like 3 points, because when you sit, absolute mayhem happens for no reason. And it's awful. And it seems so unnecessary. Like, if they could have just kept a guy like Mike Muscala over the years, the Bucks found Brooke Lopez originally for $3.3 million. They found Bobby Portis and PJ Tucker. They're looking for Jay Crowder. They know they need guys like this. The Sixers just keep going to guys like Dwight Howard, Greg Monroe, DeAndre Jordan, Montrezl Harrell, and it's just an organizational problem that really seems to cost Joel in these voter awards, because voters love these head-to-head games.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't seem like Paul Reed seems pretty buried in the rotation. Obviously, Doc doesn't trust him at all. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, we'll see if they pick someone up. There's been a lot of rumors that Kelly Olynyk could be available, which might be nice. Yeah, I would take him. I mean, he kind of fits the mold of some of the guys you just mentioned, where he could at least come in and stretch the floor.
PJ Tucker insurance, or someone who could also play with Tucker.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough. I mean, the Sixers just have so few assets. It's hard to know what they'll really be able to do. But
I would be eyeing the Hornets second round pick. That's going to be like 33rd overall. That's almost a first.
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure Daryl will try to cash it in. I mean, the team looks really good. I think they're two games behind Boston now.
Korkmaz
in
that
second. The loss column.
Yep. We're rooting for the Knicks as we record this to beat the Nets, which would be a big help.
I don't know, man. Keep rooting for the Knicks. You might...
Stop. Stop. I will take Brunson and Randall over KD, Kyrie,
I mean,
Claxton, Harris, Simmons, O'Neal, and whatever they get for the Sixers.
That team plays hard. That team plays hard.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare to convince me to worry more about the Knicks than the Nets. All right, let's switch gears. Sixers' best win of the year. Joel's 8-1 MVP odds are certainly going to drop.
Give the man his trophy. Jokic should give him one, honestly. He has two. I don't know if he brings them on the road, but if he does, it'd be the right thing to do to say, you know what? I have two of these. I saw what you did tonight. Here's one of them. Now we each have one. Totally reasonable. And we'll see who gets the tiebreaker this year. That seems, you know, that would be the right thing to do. But again, I don't know if he brings them on the road. I don't know. Maybe his brothers might be close by.
And if you think Russell Westbrook should give his 2017 trophy to James Harden, I won't argue with you there either. But I don't know if he takes it on the road.
I don't know if he takes on the road.
All right, let me get your feeling on the Eagles right now.
I'm feeling pretty good. I expect, you know, I mean, San Francisco is very good, but I think that the Eagles are at home. They have a better quarterback. and they're a little bit
much
more versatile. Much better. Yeah. So you have the better quarterback, you're at home, and
usually that's good enough.
Usually that's good enough. Now, if you want to tell me the Niners have a coaching advantage, I won't argue with you.
They do. Okay. Maybe I'll change my tune. I think that Sirianni has been very, very good, much better than I expected. I thought he was going to run this run-heavy approach that would have made them an above-average team, and instead they came out like the Buffalo Bills, throwing every time, and it worked. But I think Kyle Shanahan has been one of the best three or four or five coaches over the last half decade, for sure. I mean, going back to, he should have run the ball a little bit more in the Super Bowl, but still, he's been one of the best assets in the game.
What I'm looking for is, can the Eagles take a lead? Because San Fran, they've played almost every game. It feels like they're playing with a lead. So they don't have to get the quarterback too involved. They can run a game plan where he's not having to make major plays. They've got a great running attack. So if the Eagles can jump out, get a lead, crowd starts going crazy, the Niners have to throw the ball, that'll really play into the Eagles' hands. I expect them to win tomorrow. That would be my pick. I feel pretty good about that.
Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey. Do you give the Niners the edge in terms of skill player positions? There's AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, Miles Sanders on the other side.
I think it's pretty close. I mean, you could definitely make an argument that San Fran has a slight edge there, but what is Hurts this? I think Hurts is 15-1 when he's played. He looked pretty good against the Giants. They're at home. Like, for me, that's good enough. That's good enough.
Yeah. What percent healthy do you think he is? An AC sprain is not something that heals in the amount of time that he took off. So, he's,
if I had to ballpark it, I would say he's maybe 80%. Yeah. So it seems like he's okay throwing, but he does seem to be a little bit less aggressive on the running, but there's ways to plan around that, I think.
And how about on the other side? How are you feeling about, I just saw Travis Kelce was put on the injury report with a back issue. He missed media. There is some clips of him running, and he does look okay. Obviously, he's going to play, but any late Friday addition to the injury report with a back to your best weapon is odd, especially that Mahomes is dealing with a high ankle sprain. And we remember from many other occasions that it takes like 2 months to heal.
Yeah, I mean, if it's an actual high ankle sprain, like the kind that
you saw it,
usually you leave the game in a boot and you're like literally on crutches for 2 weeks, then I mean, it's really hard to pick the Chiefs. But he did finish the game. He did practice this week.
Full
I don't know what they're going to shoot. I don't know what they're going to shoot him up with, but it's going to be something that normal people don't have access to. And
he said he has 8,000 devices that he uses for it.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, there's no telling what kind of stem cell blood
deer spinning, antler.
Deer antler
holograms
that they're going to shoot him up with. But I mean, who knows? Like, he might come out on Sunday and look pretty good.
If you were a Birds fan, who are you rooting for on the other side of that bracket?
Man. Well, you figure if you get the Chiefs, you're getting Mahomes on two more weeks rest, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if you get the Bengals, that'll be a team that's won how many in a row now?
I don't know, 11?
11 in a row. Like, I mean, we might look back and just be like, yeah, the Bengals were like a historic, like just a complete juggernaut.
Yeah. If they could have converted like a fourth and one in the Super Bowl, they would have won it. And we'd look at them a little bit differently today.
I think I'd rather play the Chiefs if I was the Eagles. And yet I just feel like for some reason, KC pulls this game out.
Wow. Okay. I am with you. I would agree that I would be rooting for the Chiefs because of the injury situation. And because of the injury situation, I think the Bengals pull it out. I think Mahomes is going to do some magic. I think he's going to provided this valiant effort. They never really, despite the amazing offense, they never found someone that I really trust other than Travis Kelce. You know, like replacing Tyreek with a bunch of guys who are okay. Valdez Scantling, Juju Smith-Schuster, Sky Moore, who isn't really part of their rotation right now. Kadarius Toney, who will be certainly the X factor because he is talented. Can they get him the ball? Is he healthy? Is he more of a gadget guy in this game? I don't know. They don't have a running game you can totally trust. And so I think that the Bengals are going to win, and I think that they would beat the Eagles in the Super Bowl at this point. I know that's sacrilege on a Philadelphia pod, but that would be my guess as of today.
I don't think that's unreasonable at all. Logically, the Bengals should win. I would love to see Andy Reid versus the Eagles. I feel like that would be poetic in many ways.
Absolutely.
And we got a pretty good chance. I mean, if both home teams can win, which
we all deserve championship, that.
Yeah, we all deserve that. So that'd be a lot of fun.
All right, Greg, where can the people find you? You have anything to promote, plug, any last parting shots?
No, I'm off. I'm just
a man in the
bring universe. Me out of the bullpen. Bring me out of the bullpen when you need me, and I'll try to give you a few scoreless innings.
And what do you think of the Sixers' chances over the next couple of weeks? I know the schedule gets much tougher.
Yeah, well, I mean, the schedule, this was supposed to be the tough stretch, right? I mean, the Nets and the Nuggets, when you looked at January, like
Orlando, games. San Antonio's next. You might be able to win all three of those, so, and the rest of the guys.
They really should. I'll be a little nervous for the next game for the letdown factor. I mean, this was such a emotional, lot of effort. And you could definitely see if they kind of come out flat on Monday. I could totally see that. But hopefully Orlando is just not good enough and it won't matter.
All right. So avoid the trap game. Thanks so much for tuning in. Greg, thanks for joining us. Another episode of the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Let's go.